Okay, I want to pick up where we left off in the book of Ezekiel. We left off in chapter 27, and if you remember last week, we're dealing with the city of Tyre. And I don't have my map up there right now, but this Tyre, prophet after prophet had predicted their destruction and their doom. And what Tyre really epitomized is it epitomized a city that became autonomous from God. It became a city that was so wealthy and became so materialistic, and people were living in such luxury, and they were just so wealthy that they just totally ignored God, forgot God. As a matter of fact, they basically elevated themselves to be a god. And God had a real special judgment for this particular city because she became so wealthy because she was located right there on the northern tip of Israel on the coast of the Mediterranean Sea. And she had a tremendous sea trade. She was trading with all of these different nations all around the known world. And ships were coming and going from her port a day and night. It was just a constant, never-ending drumbeat of commercialism. And man, they really got wealthy. And then they got this arrogance, and they just became so cocksure of themselves, and they just didn't want anything to do with God. And money became their god. And this is the thing that people have to understand very clearly, is that this is what has happened all throughout the ages. It basically, currency and the love of money, it started way, way back in Babylon under Nimrod. It appears that in the ancient Babylon, which was also known as Shinar, that's where they developed all these different false religions and cults and all of these things that were dealing with witchcraft and sorcery and astrology and all these things. And that's why Babylon is referred to as the mother of harlots. And if you read it in Revelation chapter 17, God has a special judgment for this spiritual whore that is referred to in Revelation 17 as being the mother of harlots. But God has a special judgment for the economic whore that has basically taken the hearts of men everywhere and in every age and turned them from God. And as a matter of fact, when Tyre was destroyed, just keep this in mind, the prophets predicted her total destruction, and we read last week where Ezekiel predicted that she would be completely destroyed and that God would take that whole stinking city and throw it into the sea and scrape Tyre like a rock. And what was interesting is history bears this out, is that when Nebuchadnezzar came up against that city, through the reading of Josephus and other historians, apparently there was like a 13-year siege against this city on the mainland. But it was a siege that, what would happen is there was a rotation where Nebuchadnezzar was basically in charge of not just Babylon, but basically all of the known world at that particular time. So he would just have one army after another rotate out month after month and year after year until this city was totally, completely destroyed. But when it looked like her final demise was very, very imminent, a lot of the the elite, the politicians, the wealthy, the really well-to-do, the well-connected people, they just got on a bunch of ships, and they just went out to this island out there that was about a quarter mile out from the sea, out from the mainland, and they went there, and Nebuchadnezzar didn't have a navy, so he couldn't get to them, but he completely destroyed and demolished the city on the mainland, totally destroyed it, and it just left it in a heap of ruin. And then it wasn't until almost 300 years later, over 200 years later, Alexander the Great was on his march. And he goes up to this island out there. He was basically gave them an ultimatum to surrender to him, but he didn't have a navy any more than Nebuchadnezzar did. And they just blew him off. Said, there was no way you can get to us, right? So he got so angry, he was so livid, he was so determined to destroy that city out there on that island, that he had all his army and all of his slaves and all the surrounding villages and everybody he could get a hold of, he had them pick up all the entire rubble of Tyre and throw it into the sea. And he created a causeway that went from the mainland right over to that city that was on the island. And he totally destroyed that city. And it's just a total prediction of what God said was going to happen to the city, that he was going to utterly destroy it and take the whole stinking city and throw it into the sea. Well, it took centuries for the whole fulfillment of the prophecies to come to pass. But now it was Jesus Christ, when he was talking about the unrepentant cities of his day, In Matthew chapter 11, he says, "Woe to you, Chorazin, woe to you, Bethsaida, for if the miracles had occurred in Tyre and Sidon, which had occurred in you, they would have repented long ago in sackcloth and ashes. Nevertheless, I say to you, it will be more tolerable for Tyre and Sidon in the day of judgment than for you. And you, Capernaum, will you will not be exalted to heaven, will you? You will descend to Hades or to hell, for if the miracles had occurred in Sodom, which occurred in you, it would have remained to this day. Nevertheless, I say to you, it will be more tolerable for the land of Sodom in the day of judgment than for you." And Jesus Christ is making reference to the city of Tyre. God had totally destroyed that city, and that city basically is in hell, because we are told clearly, and I believe it's Psalm 9, where God says that the nations that forget God, He's going to turn them into hell. Now, that doesn't mean everybody in that city went to hell, and it doesn't mean every time that a nation forgets God, that all the inhabitants go to hell, but as a whole, that's what happened to this city. Yeah.
I don't want to break the train of thought, but I just thought of something really, it's kind of cool. This whole passage talking about Tyre, and talks about the wealth and the trade and the ships and the people offshore and all this stuff. That passage, it talks about Babylon. I forget which prophetic book it's in, but it talks about them whaling the ships offshore, whaling at the demise in 1 hour.
Right.
Babylon.
Right.
It's kind of interesting, the parallel.
Right. Well, that's exactly what I'm getting to, Dan. Jumped the gun. Okay. But here, if you can, just turn there. Revelation 18, because this is going to come into prominence towards the end of the world, and God has a special judgment for this particular city. But this city is going to be Babylon, and it's going to become the economic nerve center of the world. Now, that seems totally completely impossible, just totally impossible, when you consider that it's over there in Iraq. It's probably about 65 miles below Baghdad. But the prophets have all predicted a complete and total destruction of Babylon. Now, understand this clearly. Prophet after prophet described or predicted the destruction of Babylon, but the way that Jeremiah described it and other prophets, they describe it as a complete and total utter destruction of Babylon, where there would never be any life whatsoever in Babylon again. And Babylon has never had that violent overthrow, even though, you know, with the Medes and the Persians, when they overthrew Babylon, they didn't completely demolish that city. And then century after century, the city continued to exist. But eventually, because of the trade routes, trading and whatnot, you know, it eventually became nothing more than a buried city, but it became known as a village or a city or a town named Hilla. All right, but you know, it was Saddam Hussein who actually had this city unearthed and reconstructed. I mean, I've got pictures of it right there that you could see. Matter of fact, you can get them on the internet. It was Saddam Hussein. He spent almost $1 billion in the restoration of this city. All right, and you can see it right there what he's done. Now, Saddam Hussein's been long dead, and understand something about this city. This city in Revelation chapter 18 is referred to as the great city, the great city, the great city. But don't get this mental picture that it's going to be great in its size. But this city is going to be really great in terms of its significance, because this city is going to become the economic nerve center of the world, you know, once the tribulation starts. And, you know, I really believe that if you look at what happens when the tribulation starts, I believe strongly from what Ezekiel has predicted and the prophets, the apostles, and Jesus, that tribulation is going to be kicked off with an all-out invasion of Israel by Russia itself. And that's when the tribulation is going to start. And it appears, if you read Revelation chapter 8, simultaneously when Russia is invading Israel with all of her satellite or all of her allies, that's when it says that Ezekiel says God's fury is going to come up into his face, and he's going to strike this world. And it appears from Revelation chapter 8 that it's going to be hit with an asteroid simultaneously. Now, this, I'll explain this later when we get into chapter 38 of Ezekiel and what I'm talking about here. But what I'm saying is that this tribulation, once it starts, we are told in Revelation 6 that just for starters, a quarter of mankind is going to be wiped out. Now, the population of the world, it's pushing almost 8 billion now, right? And if you wipe out a quarter of mankind, you're talking about 2 billion people just for starters. That's just the start. But then imagine now that this tremendous calamity that would happen if we did get hit by an asteroid, and there was a limited nuclear exchange, and there was this all-out invasion of Israel, and all of this stuff happened, then Everybody on earth is going to be clamoring for one world government, one world leader, one world economic system, one world military system, religious system, the whole thing. And then everybody's going to get on board because that's what it's going to take. It's going to take such a calamity, such a catastrophe that the world has never seen before when everybody's going to get on board. Now, when they get on board, I'm convinced that it's the Antichrist himself who's going to say, okay, all right, from here on out, we're going to make Babylon, the economic trade center of the world. And then God has a special judgment. He's going to judge the world economy. He's going to judge it because how many people have put money before God? It was Jesus Christ who said, you cannot serve two masters. You're going to love one or hate the other. You're going to cleave to one or despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. Look at all the things that men will do for money. Name one thing that men won't do for money. Even people that claim to be Christian. Remember in the New Testament, it was Ananias and Sapphira in Acts chapter 5. They lied about money, you know, and God took their life. Or how about what Jesus Christ says, you know, don't store up yourself treasures here on earth where the moths can break in and the thieves can get at it and the rust can get at it, but store up your treasures in heaven. You read the prophets like Micah, you read in Proverbs, it warns about people who take bribes. Look at how many people are going to take today as far as bribes. People will do, name one thing that people will not do for money. How much did Judas sell Jesus Christ for? 30 pieces of silver, right? Jesus Christ, in his very beginning of his public ministry, he went into the temple and he just turned over the money changers' tables. Man, he was absolutely livid. He said, you're turning my father's house into a den of thieves. And at the very end of his public ministry, he did the exact same thing because money has such a tenacity to it. And there's such a warning in regards to the dangers of money. It was James who said this. He says, what is the source of your quarrels and conflicts among you? Is it not the source of your pleasures that wage war with your members? You lust and do not have, so you commit murder. You are envious and cannot obtain, so you fight and quarrel. You do not have because you do not ask. You ask and you do not receive because you ask with the wrong motives, so that you may spend it on your pleasures. You adulteresses, do you not know that friendship with the world is hostility towards God? Therefore, whoever wishes to make himself a friend of the world makes himself an enemy with God. And he's saying, hey, what's the source of all your quarrels, all your wars? It's that you're lusting after all these things and you're willing to kill and to murder and to do anything to enrich yourself. But you know what? There's a special judgment for, you know, people of the last days. James goes on to say this. He says, come now, you rich, weep and howl for your miseries which are coming upon you. Your riches have rotted and your garments have become moth-eaten. Your gold and your silver have rusted and the rust will be a witness against you and will consume your flesh like fire. It is in the last days that you have stored up your treasure. I'm going to read that again. He says that it is in the last days that you've stored up your treasure. Look at all the millionaires, the billionaires today, right? I mean, it really is something. And the poor are getting poorer and the middle class are just becoming non-existent. But the rich are really getting rich. And he says, behold, the pay of the laborers who mowed your fields and which has been withheld by you cries out against you, and the outcry of those who did the harvesting has reached the ears of the Lord of the Sabbath. You have lived luxuriously on the earth and led a life of wanton pleasure. You have fattened your hearts in the day of slaughter. You have condemned and put to death the righteous man who does not resist you. In other words, look at how people are being exploited today by these CEOs. I mean, every time you turn around, it seems like you're reading more and more about how these CEOs are making so much money, but what are they doing? They're just really ruining the lives of, you know, the people that work for them. Money is the driving force, and people will do anything for money, and they will really, really just completely exploit people when it comes to money. Now, I know I've really beat this to death, but it's so important that we get this in our minds, what's happening. So if you can turn to Revelation chapter 18, because this is going to be the tire of the last days. God has a special judgment for our economic system. And don't get me wrong, there's nothing wrong with money in and of itself. Okay. All right, but Paul says it's the love of money that is the root of all kinds of evil. It's the love of money, right? He says this in verse 1 of chapter 18 of Revelation. He says, after these things I saw another angel coming down from heaven having a great authority, and the earth was illuminated with his glory, and he cried out with a mighty voice, saying, fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great. She has become a dwelling place of demons and a prison of every unclean spirit and a prison of every unclean and hateful bird. He's talking about, you know, demon possession and demonic influence is going to be really rampant in this city. Why? Because money has become an idol. Greed is idolatry. That's what we're told. And wherever men are worshiping idols, believe me, it's the demons who really, really manifest themselves. Matter of fact, Paul tells us in Corinthians 10, he says, man, the Gentiles, they sacrifice to their idols, but who they're really sacrificing to is demons. That's what Paul says, and that's what we also told in Deuteronomy, that when people are sacrificing to idols, they're really sacrificing to demons. And that's why this economic nerve center of the world is going to become, it's going to be a real concentration of, you know, demonic forces, all right, that are driving it. Mm-hmm. So he goes on to say this, for all the nations have drunk of the wine and the passion of her immorality, and the kings of the earth have committed acts of immorality with her, and the merchants of the earth have become rich by the wealth of her sensuality. Now the immorality is spiritual, because God was just talking about, I was reading in James, where it says, you adulteress, don't you realize that this kind of thing makes us unfaithful to God, right? People will put money before God all the time. He goes on to say, I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, so that you will not participate in her sins and receive her plagues. For her sins have piled up high as heaven, and God has remembered her iniquities. Pay her back even as she has paid, and give back to her double according to her deeds. In the cup which she has mixed, mix twice as much for her, to the degree that she glorified herself and lived sensuously to the same degree. Give her torment and mourning, for she says in her heart, I sit as a queen, I am not a widow, and I will never see mourning. In other words, this is what the merchants feel. This is what money is like. Who would ever believe that there'll come a day when our economic system is going to completely collapse and it'll never rise again? We can't even fathom that. And that's why it says she feels like, I sit as a queen, I'll never see mourning, I'll never be a widow. Mm-hmm. All right. That money's going to continue to be the holy grail for all mankind. He says in verse 8, says, for this reason, in one day her plagues will come, pestilence and mourning and famine, and she will be burned up with fire, for the Lord God who judges her is strong. Now, God has predicted the destruction of this city, but he says it's going to come in one day. And then as we read further on, he's going to say in 1 hour, 1 hour, 1 hour, and it's going to be burned up with fire in 1 hour. It goes on to say in Revelation 18, verse 9, and the kings of the earth who committed acts of immorality and lived sensuously with her will weep and lament over her when they see the smoke of her burning, standing at a distance because of the fear of her torment, saying, woe, woe, the great city, Babylon, the strong city, for in 1 hour your judgment has come. Now this whole city is going up in smoke, but all of the merchants and all these wealthy people, what are they crying about? Are they crying for all these lost lives in this city? No, no. And that's why when we get into Ezekiel and read that chapter 27, it almost parallels, you know, identically to what we're reading right here. It goes on to say, and the merchants of the earth weep and mourn over her because no one buys her cargoes anymore. Now listen, this list that is listed here, it's almost like a legal document where God does not want any loopholes. And what he's going to describe here is all wealth, money, material things, the things that men put before God, because it goes on to say, no one buys her cargoes anymore. Cargoes of gold and silver and precious stones and pearls and fine linen and purple and silk and scarlet and every kind of citron wood and every article of ivory and every article made from very costly wood and bronze and iron and marble and cinnamon and spice and incense and perfume and frankincense and wine and olive oil and flour and fine flour and wheat and cattle and sheep and cargoes of horses and chariots and slaves and human lives. Now if it says slaves and human lives, what could it be referring to there? What kind of slaves? Look at the sex trade today. Yeah. All right, that becomes what? Slaves, right? Mm-hmm. Also, human lives. I'm telling you right now, this whole thrust to murder unborn children, you better believe it, that money's behind it. There's a driving force. People wouldn't be doing it if they weren't making a lot of money doing this, right? And it goes on to say, the fruit you long for has gone from you, and all the things which were luxurious and splendid have passed away from you. Men will no longer find them. The merchants of these things who became rich from her will stand at a distance because of the fear of her torment, weeping and mourning. Now keep that in mind, because this is almost identical to what Ezekiel is going to say about Tyre. He says, saying, woe, woe, the great city, she who was clothed in fine linen and purple and scarlet and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls, for in 1 hour, there it is again, for in 1 hour such great wealth has been laid waste, and every shipmaster and every passenger and sailor and as many as make their living by the sea stood at a distance and were crying out as they saw the smoke of her burning, saying, what city is like the great city? Now this city is on fire, and they're saying that all these shipbuilders and shipmasters, they're all standing at a distance because of the fear of her torment. front. So what does that suggest to you? What's going to happen to this city?
I thought it was radiation.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be nuclear. They have to stand at a distance because of this. And it goes on, says, and they threw dust on their heads and were crying out, weeping and mourning, saying, whoa, whoa, the great city. That's, it says it again, the great city. But don't get this idea that this is one huge, massive metropolis as far as its size. But it is great in terms of its significance. It's like if you take the New York Stock Exchange, the London Stock Exchange, the Tokyo Stock Exchange, the Russian Stock Exchange, the China Stock Exchange. Put all these stock exchanges together in this one place. Now you see how great it can be as far as its significance, right? And he says, whoa, the great city in which all who had ships at sea became rich at by her wealth, for in 1 hour she has laid waste. Again, God emphasizes that again, in 1 hour. Rejoice over her, O heavens, and you saints and apostles and prophets, because God has pronounced judgment for you against her. Then a strong angel took up a stone like a great millstone and threw it into the sea, saying, so will Babylon, the great city, be thrown down with violence and will not be found any longer. And the sound of harp and musicians and flute players and trumpeteers will not be heard in you any longer. No craftsman or any craft will be found in you any longer. And the sound of the mill will not be heard in you any longer. And the light of the lamp will not shine in you any longer. And the voice of the bridegroom and the bride will not be heard in you any longer. For your merchants were the great men of the earth, because all the nations were deceived by your sorcery. And in her was found the blood of the prophets and of the saints and all who has been slain on the earth. In other words, God's going to lay at their feet, because look at all the murders that have been shed because of money or because of the love of money. Do you think that there would be any pornography on the internet if it wasn't driven for money? Do you think women would be prostituting themselves if it wasn't for money? Just throw it out there. People were lying and cheating and stealing. Look at all their, people are just ripping people off left and right. And one of the scariest things is identity theft. They steal your identity. They can ruin you financially, right? And people say, well, man, it's basically good. I say, oh yeah, baloney. If you accidentally leave your wallet sitting in the store or after you purchase something and walk out, and then you realize, man, I left my checkbook, my wallet, my credit card on the counter there, are you going to panic?
Yeah.
Now, why? Because if you're so foolish, you think, well, everybody's basically good. I'll just walk, you know, stroll back in there and get it, man. You're living on the moon. So what I want to do now, I'm just trying to preface this because, believe me, I'm biting off probably more than I could chew. But we're going to do our best to get through this, because this is so important, because it's dealing with this thing that is so hateful to God, is that men throughout every age have put money, material things, and wealth before God. And God tells us very clearly in Deuteronomy chapter 6, he told his people, look, when you get into this land and you get all this stuff that you didn't work for, all these houses and these cisterns and these wells, and you get all these flocks and these herds and these orchards, and you get all this stuff, he says, and then your bellies are full, he says, then beware lest you forget the Lord your God. And he said, the only antidote not to forget me when you are prosperous is you've got to read my words, you've got to study my words, you've got to talk about me when you rise up and when you go to bed and when you walk along the way and when you're having a meal, and you've got to have scripture verses around your house all the time. That's our only hope. But we became fat and sassy, and now we've forgotten God. Now, you know, look at us. You know, we can see the judgment wonder. But now, pick up with this first one in chapter 27. It's almost identical to what we read in Revelation chapter 18 in regards to Babylon. It says, moreover, the word of the Lord came to me, saying, and you, son of man, take up a lamentation over Tyre, and say to Tyre, who dwells at the entrance to the sea, merchants of the peoples to many coastlands, thus says the Lord. So he talks about the entrance, who dwells at the entrance to the sea. In other words, this was the greatest shipfaring nation in the world, and they were really, really wealthy because of all their trade. It goes on to say, O Tyre, you have said, I am perfect in beauty. Your borders are in the hearts of the seas. Your builders have perfected your beauty. In other words, God is describing here almost as though Tyre itself was a type of ship. And he says, they have made all your planks of fir trees from Sinar. They have taken a cedar from Lebanon to make a mast for you. Of oaks from Bashan, they have made your oars with ivory. They have inlaid your deck of boxwood from the coastlands of Cyprus. Your sails of fine embroidered linen from Egypt, so that it became your distinguishing mark. Your awning was blue and purple from the coastlands of Elisha. The inhabitants of Sidon and Arvad were your rowers. Your wise men, O Tyre, were aboard. They were your pilots. The elders of Vegebal and her wise men were with you, repairing your seams. All the ships of the sea and your sailors were with you in order to deal in your merchandise. Now, God is speaking metaphorically, and he's just describing this city almost like a ship, and everything on a ship, it says they imported all this stuff, you know, to really make this ship something to be envied, a city on a hill. I mean, something that the whole world could look to and look up to, in a sense that, man, all this wealth came from all of these different places. But I think it's interesting that God kind of, you know, describes her as a ship. Because I can't help but think of, we just commemorated this past year, the 100th year of the sinking of the Titanic, right? Mm-hmm. And you can almost see a parallel there. You really can, in the sense that here was a ship that they boasted was unsinkable. And the only thing it ever did was sink. Mm-hmm. They say, well, it's got all these airtight compartments, and if one, you know, compartment is punctured, well, it's got all these other safety, you know, built-in safeguards and all this other stuff. Man, the whole thing just went down. Man, it went down in a heartbeat. 1,500 people lost their life. And I'm telling you, you know, there's something to be said about that, when men just, in their arrogance and their pride, just feel like, well, you know, this thing can never sink, or this thing will never go away. You know what I'm saying? And he goes on to say in this first standard of Ezekiel chapter 27, it says, Persia and Lud and Put were in your army, your men of war. They hung shields and helmet in you, and they set forth your splendor. In other words, Persia is Iran, and Lud and Put, that's Libya and parts of the Africa. And you know, they basically hired mercenaries to be their army, to be their protectors, right? And it says the sons of Arvad and your army were on your walls all around. The Kamagin were in your towers. They hung their shields on your walls and all around, and they perfected your beauty. In other words, she was well fortified, well protected. She had all of these, you know, basically trained soldiers, mercenaries to be her defenders. They just figured there's no way that this city is ever going to go away. Right? This is what happens when pride and arrogance really begins to set in. Look at this country. This country once was a country that honored God. Now we're just at war with God. We're acting with such hostility towards God. It's just really, really heartbreaking to see what's happening. But now we're seeing, you know, I mean, we figured, well, we're the greatest superpower in the world and all this. Well, now we can see clearly, you know, we're on our way out. We're on our way down, right? Well, that's the way these people felt. Like, we're just a superpower, basically. And then it goes on to say in verse 12, Tarshish was your customer because of the abundance of all the kinds of wealth with silver and iron and tin and lead they paid for your wares. And Tarshish, it's believed to be Spain, but it's also included to be, it maybe include the British Isles. All right. So in other words, their trade went, you know, all over the known world at that time. Man, they became extremely rich and wealthy and famous. And it says Javan and Tubal and Meshach. These are the ancient names for some of these Russian territories beyond the Black Sea. You know, they were part of her trade. He says, they were your traders with the lives of men and vessels of bronze. They paid for your merchandise. Those from Beth-Togarmah gave horses and war horses and mules for your wares. In other words, I think it's referring to parts of Greece even. He says, the sons of Dedan, this was down there in Arabia, were your traders. Many coastlands were your market. Ivory tusk and ebony they brought as your payment. Aram was your customer because of the abundance of your goods. They paid for your wares with emeralds and purple embroidered work, fine linen, coral, and rubies. And Aram, that's another word for Syria. It says, Judah and the land of Israel, they were your traders with the wheat of Minnith, cakes, honey, oil, balm. They paid for your merchandise. And we were just reading in Revelation chapter 18. They were talking about oil and fine flour and all of these things, right? And, it's, and cinnamon and spices. And then it goes on to say in verse 18, of Ezekiel 27, Damascus was your customer because of the abundance of your goods, because of the abundance of all kinds of wealth, because of the wine of Helbon and white wool. Vidan and Java paid for your wares from Uzal, wrought iron, cassia, and sweet cane were among your merchandise. See, it's almost a parallel so clearly what we were talking about in Revelation 18. That whole list there, it was like almost God just wanted people to know, hey man, there's no loophole here. It's covering everything, all right, that men put a value on, and that's what diverts their attention from God. He goes on to say, Dedan traded with you in saddlecloths for riding. Arabia and all of the princes of Kedar, they were your customers for lambs and rams and goats, for these they were your customers. Isn't that very close to what we were just reading over there in Revelations? It says, the traders of Sheba and Rama, they traded with you. They paid for your wares with the best of all kinds of spices and all kinds of precious stones and gold. Haran and Kenneth and Eden, the traders of Sheba and Asher and Chilmad, traded with you. He's talking about these places. Eden, it would be Mesopotamia. He's talking about Kenneth, which would be over there towards Babylon and Assyria, all of these different lands of the east. It goes on to say, they traded with you in choice garments and clothes of blue and embroidered work and in carpets of many colors and tightly wound cords, which were among your merchandise. The ships of Tarshish were the carriers of your merchandise, and you were filled and were very glorious in the heart of the seas. Your rowers have brought you into great waters. The east wind has broken you in the heart of the seas. Now, when it talks about this, go back to God's metaphor about Tyre being described as a ship. So you tell me what this says then. Is this verse 26 when it says, your rowers have brought you into great waters. The east wind has broken you in the heart of the seas. Now, if God is referring to this Tyre metaphorically as being this very, very, you know, costly, well-built ship, what is this verse 26 saying?
Leaders are leading.
Good.
In the wrong direction.
Good. Now I'm going to read this again. And can you see this country? The leadership is at war with God, and they can't make any intelligent decisions, and everything they're doing is just making matters worse. And read it again. Your rowers are basically, just throw in there, your politicians. I don't care whether they're state or they're federal or they're local. It's the same thing. There are rowers, right? Your rowers have brought you into great waters. In other words, man, they really brought us out there in some dangerous territories, right? The east wind has broken you in the heart of the sea. Now, what does that mean? What came from the east to destroy them?
Babylon.
Babylon. It says, your wealth, verse 27, your wealth, your wares, your merchandise, your sailors and your pilots, your repairers of seams, your dealers in merchandise, and all your men of war who are in you with all your company that is in your midst will fall into the heart of the seas on the day of your overthrow. And that's what happened to this entire ship of Tyre. It was ended up being thrown into the sea. God had such contempt for this city because this city became so obnoxious towards God because it put money, it put wealth, it put material things, it put all these things in the place of God. They worshiped the almighty dollar. That's what they did. And you know, God had a special judgment for them. And then he says in verse 28, at the sound of the cry of your pilots. Now, who would be the pilots? They're the leaders, right? Right. At the sound of the cry of your pilots, the pasture lands will shake. In other words, they're talking about the land itself will shake. Well, the whole mainland was shaking when Nebuchadnezzar was destroying the whole thing, right? And then it was Alexander the Great who took the whole thing and threw it into the sea. And it says, all who handle the oar, the sailors and all the pilots of the sea will come down from their ships and they will stand on the land. In other words, when the merchants that were out there with all their stuff to trade with Tyre, when it was destroyed, they just stayed at a distance, all right? And then when finally the armies left, they came to just look at the ruins. Read that verse 29 again. All who handle the oar, the sailors and all the pilots of the sea will come down from their ships. They will stand on their land, and they will make their voice heard over you and will cry bitterly. And this is what we just read in Revelation chapter 18, that the merchants are going to weep and wail and cry. In other words, when all these merchants, they stood at a distance when Tyre was being destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar's army. But when the armies left, after they left it in a heap of ruin, and after they killed so many people, right, then the merchants dock their ships, they get off to look at the ruins, and they're weeping over what? Are they weeping over all the loss of life? Right? And then it says in verse 30, and they will make their voice heard over you and will cry bitterly, and they will cast dust on their heads and they will wallow in ashes. Now this is so parallel to what's going to happen to our whole economic system that's going to be centered in Babylon at the end of the world. Also, they will make themselves bald for you and gird themselves with sackcloth, and they will weep for you in bitterness of soul with bitter mourning. But is there any indication here to they're weeping for the people that were killed, that were in the slaughter? No, no, it's their portfolios, it's their stocks, it's their bonds, it's their gold, it's their silver, it's their precious stones. It's all these things. Moreover, in their wailing, they will take up a lamentation for you and lament over you. Who is like Tyre, like her who's silent in the midst of the sea? In other words, she is totally... Tyre today, all it is a small little fishing village, and Ezekiel predicted that it would become a place of the spreading of the nets, and that's all it is today. And it goes on to say, verse 33, when your wares went out from the seas, you satisfied many peoples with the abundance of your wealth and your merchandise, and you enriched the kings of the earth. Now that you are broken by the seas and the depths of the waters, your merchandise and all your company have fallen in the midst of you. All the inhabitants of the coastland are appalled at you, and their kings are horribly afraid. They are troubled in countenance. The merchants among the peoples hiss at you. You have become terrified, and you will cease to be forever. I mean, this is God's judgment on Tyre, but Tyre was just a dress rehearsal for the economic system of the world that God has a special judgment for. As a matter of fact, when we went through the book of Zechariah, Zechariah talks about this coming situation with Babylon. He says this in chapter 5 of Zechariah. Zechariah, at first, he was given this vision of this flying scroll, and of course the scroll, he said it was a scroll, its length was 20 cubits and its width was 10 cubits, and it was written on front and back, and he said that this is a curse going forth among all the world, and it's going to be a curse to everyone who steals and everyone who swears falsely. So that was his first vision. And believe me, anybody that steals, you can rest assured if you dig deep enough, it's because of the love of money, or it's envy, it's greed, this type of thing. But then, when Zechariah seen this second vision in this chapter 5, where he says this, then the angel who was speaking to me went out and said to me, lift up now your eyes and see what is going forth. And I said, what is it? And he said, this is the Ephah. Some people say Ephah. I'm never sure how you pronounce that. But he says, the Ephah or the Ephah, it is a basket. It is a basket for commerce. I drew that picture there. He said this. He said, what is it? He said, this is the FF going forth. Again, he says, this is their appearance in all the land. So if this basket, FF, EFF, if that stands for commerce or money or material things, it says it's the same in all the land. What does that mean?
Do you mean the euro?
You're close. In other words, it's the same in all the land. It doesn't matter whether it's American dollar, whether it's a Mexican peso, whether it's a Russian ruble, whether it's Japanese yen, whether it's the English pound. Throw out a currency. It's the same in all the world, isn't it? Men will do anything, you know, for money. They will do anything for money. It's the same in all the land. That's why when it's talking about here, this FF that's going forth, it's the appearance is the same in all the land. And it goes on to say in Zechariah chapter 5, and behold, the lead cover was lifted up, and this is a woman sitting inside the FF. Now, this is very significant as far as the spiritual significance too. Why a woman inside this basket? Why a woman?
Lust. It's like a lust of money.
Yes, but other things too. In other words, it's not a man, it's not an animal, it's not even money itself. It's a woman, because how many times do we read about this over and over again as far as she being a queen, and as far as money is concerned, and she sits as a queen, and she thinks she'll never see mourning, and that the kings of the earth and all the merchants of the earth have committed acts of immorality with her, right? That's why it's a woman, because the parallel is that when we put anything before God, it's an act of spiritual immorality. He says in this verse 8 of this Zechariah chapter 5, then he said, this is wickedness, and he threw her down in the middle of the Ephah or Ephah and cast a lead weight on its opening. That's interesting. And one of the angels said of this woman, this is wickedness, and he threw her down. If he throws her down, it shows contempt. Right? And he says, this is wickedness. So what God is really saying to us in symbolism here is that, you know, there's virtually nothing that men will not do for money, and it becomes wickedness. This is why he throws it down. But then he puts a lead covering over her. Now, what would that symbolize?
She's trapped.
Yes. First of all, she's thrown down in the middle of the FF, meaning that, well, she's pretty comfortable in there. But if you've got a lead covering on it. Lead is extremely heavy. So in other words, it is very, very, very difficult to get out from the love of money. It was Jesus Christ who said, hey man, it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than it is for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. And it just blew away his apostles, just blew them away. Because they figured, well, if a person was rich, it means they're being blessed of God. So they must be, you know, good people. They must be tight with God. But God, Jesus came along and said, no. It's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than it is for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. So what is it about riches that makes it so difficult to get to heaven?
Becomes their God before
yeah,
God.
They become before independent, God. Autonomous from God. They don't pray about things. All the statistics that have been taken are surveys or, you know, polls have been taken. Most people think about money more than anything else. I don't care whether it's sex or a job or whatever. You know, money is basically on everybody's mind. There's nothing wrong with money, but it really got to put some ironclad safeguards when it comes to money and say, man, money can be a very, very good servant, but it makes a tyrannical master. This is why here money can be so suffocating, right? This is why there's a lead covering over this. What did Jesus Christ say about the riches? He said, man, some of the seed of God's word is thrown out there and it fell among thistles and thorns. What did the thistles and thorns represent? The cares and the worries of this world and the deceitfulness of riches. What makes riches so deceitful?
Well, you always want more.
There it is. Very good. It's like
more.
You never have enough. So there's a deceitfulness there, man. It really is. And you look at these people that are multimillionaires. Some of them are billionaires. They can never make enough. So it's really tough for rich people to get to heaven. And it goes on to say here, it says, then I lifted up my eyes and looked, and there were two women coming out with the wind to their wings. And they had wings like the wings of a stork, and they lifted up the FF between earth and heaven. Interesting thing. There's two women, but they have the wings of a stork. What's the significance of the wings of a stork? What's that?
I'm saying pregnancy, but maybe that's not.
Well, put it this way. Storks are notorious for their care of their young. That's how come probably you see that cockamamie cartoon of the stork bringing a baby and all that, right? But a stork, if you go back to Leviticus chapter 11, I believe, when you read about this dietary laws, a stork was an unclean bird. So this mission is not a divine mission. This is a demonic mission where they got the wind to their wings. In other words, when things begin to fall into place, they're going to happen rapidly. It's going to happen virtually overnight because it says here, let me read it again. Then I lifted up my eyes and looked.
Where are you again?
I'm in Zechariah chapter 5, verse 9. It said, then I lifted up my eyes and looked, and there were two women who were coming out with the wind in their wings, and they had wings like the wings of a stork, and they lifted up the FF between earth and heaven. So if they lifted it up between earth and heaven, who's looking down on it?
Angels.
God.
God's
who's looking up to it?
Man.
It's something man looks up to, God looks down on, right?
Yeah.
And I tell you what, that sun out there is 900,000 miles wide, but if you take one thin dime, you bring it up close enough to your eye, it'll blot out that sun. This is something that can blind man when it comes to, you know, heavenly things, right? Mm-hmm. And then it goes on to say, verse 10 of Zechariah chapter 5, I said to the angel who was speaking to me, where are they taking the FF? Then he said to me, to build a temple for her in the land of Shinar. Now what's Shinar?
Babylon.
It's an ancient name for Babylon, right?
God.
He says, to build a temple for her in the land of Shinar. And when it is prepared, she will be set there on her own pedestal. In other words, she's going to become a goddess, right? The economic nerve center of the world. And remember when God brought a judgment upon Babylon, when Belshazzar was the king there and he was throwing this big drunken bash? Remember what it said there? Because it says in Daniel chapter 5, it says, then they brought the gold vessels that had been taken out of the temple of the house of God, which was in Jerusalem. And the king and his nobles, his wives, and his concubines drank from them. They drank the wine. Now listen to this. They drank the wine and praised the gods of gold and silver and bronze and iron and wood and stone. And suddenly the fingers of a man's hand emerged and began writing opposite the lampstand on the plaster of the wall of the king's palace. And the king saw the back of the hand that did the writing. Then the king's face grew pale, and his thoughts alarmed him, and his hips joints went slack, and his knees began knocking together. Now, we've heard about that situation where Belshazzar and all of his people in Babylon, what are they doing? they're all getting ripped, roaring drunk, and they're blaspheming the God of heaven by using all these utensils. And believe me, it wasn't that they were short on cups and plates and utensils. He just wanted to blaspheme the God of heaven. He went out of his way to insult the God of heaven. So now they're all drinking and getting drunk out of these sacred bowls and chalices and whatnot. Then this hand begins to write, "Meanie, meanie, take hill of parson." And man, this guy knows this can't be good news, because his conscience is bugging him now, right? He thought he was going to get away with this. And what are they doing? They're praising what? The gods of silver and gold and bronze and iron and wood and stone, material things. And God says, a special judgment against this king. And then finally, nobody could figure out what that meant until Daniel comes in and says, "Hey, man, you should have known better than do this. Do you remember what happened to your grandfather Nebuchadnezzar, man? He lost his mind for 7 years when he thought he was something. God just took him down." And he said, "You didn't learn from that." Now, he says, "Meanie, meanie, take old parson." It means, hey, man, your kingdom has been divided. You've been weighed in the balances and found wanting. And this night, your kingdom is going to be divided between the Medes and the Persians, right? So, like I said, I could go on and on and on, but I'm out of time. Yeah. I'm out of time, but I'm trying to get this message across that is so needed today, that God has a special hatred for money and material things in his place.
Right.
Because it becomes the form of all kinds of evil, all kinds of wickedness. Anyway, I don't want to get on a soapbox. Yeah.
Just one more time. This thing about the woman in the basket, is that kind of like a direct tie into the Babylon? That really is kind of addressing or pointing towards the Babylon that we're talking about in Revelation?
Yes, because didn't I just read it there?
Yeah.
He said, "Where are they taking the half-half?" And he said, "They're taking."
Sure. That's what I meant. That's what the context of what you're saying. But I find it interesting, it's in Zechariah, and then it ties in directly with what Revelation talks about.
Exactly what I'm saying.
It's prophetic about the
Because he said this, "Then he said to me, to build a temple for her in the land of Shinar." Now, if it's a temple, it means she's going to be worshipped in the land of Shinar.
Right.
It's going to be Babylon. And when it is prepared, she will be set there on her own pedestal. Right?
Yeah.
Right? Okay, anybody have anything want to add or share?
Well,